Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today we're going to talk about kids when they're 10, 12, 13 years old. Well, one was in college, but I'll call them kids. Who really applied themselves and helped to change history and scientific advancements. And they really make you think, wow, what was I doing when I was 10 or 12 years old? Even if I was in college, we're going to talk about a college term paper that helped to change history. What was I doing? My term papers were just things that I pounded away at the keyboard at 2 a.m. before they were due because I was out hanging out with my friends all hours of the night doing things like taking 2-liter bottles of soda and throwing them off of parking garages to see if we could get them to land on the cap. And once we did get it to land on the cap, and it was glorious. When you get a 2-liter bottle of soda, you throw it from 30, 40 feet in the air, and it lands on the cap, it turns into a bottle rocket, and it shoots up, and it probably went 40 or 50 feet in the air. So that was my accomplishment. These young people, far more accomplished than that. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Little reminder to our new time listeners. Monday through Thursday, we talk apologetics, theology, how to explain and defend the Catholic faith. Friday, though, we talk about whatever I want to talk about. And today, I want to talk about these young people that really applied themselves. And that should be a good lesson for all of us in that respect. The first one is on Hunter Scott. I'll be reading to you from an article published in the OAH Magazine of History by Carl Weinberg on Hunter Scott. So here's the story. Have you ever watched Jaws? If so, you've heard the story of the USS Indianapolis, a U.S. Navy cruiser sunk by a Japanese submarine in the Pacific during the final weeks of World War II. As the veteran shark-hunting Captain Quint, played by Robert Shaw, tells Police Chief Brody and Marine Biologist Matt Hooper, Roy Scheider, Richard Dreyfuss, that's a great movie. I should try to have the quote here. I'll try to read this in my Robert Shaw voice. We was coming back from the island of Tinian to late. We just delivered the bomb, the Hiroshima bomb. And so the ship was sunk. And what they say is that because the ship was on such a secret mission, nobody knew it was gone. And so the survivors of the sinking were in these shark-infested waters for like 3 days until they were finally rescued. So what he says in the movie, you know that, Brody, 1,100 men went into the water. 316 men come out. Sharks got the rest. Now, we don't know if 900 sailors were killed by sharks. There were massive shark attacks among the men who were in the water. Most of them, though, probably died from salt poisoning, dehydration, drowning, things like that. Though the ones that were weaker and then the ones that died, the sharks probably came after them and other people that were dying. So, terrible tragedy. And what happened was the ship actually radioed for help, and it made it to 3 nearby bases, but one of them, I think the guy was asleep, another one, the supervisor, the commanding officer didn't want to be disturbed, and the other guy who got the message thought it was a trap and didn't want to relay the message. So it got to 3 bases and it was ignored, so it was just awful. But what happened was that the captain, the commanding officer of the ship, Captain Charles Butler McVeigh III, was court-martialed and convicted for hazarding the vessel for not applying, I think, defensive maneuvers in the water to try to prevent it from being sunk, even though the captain of the Japanese submarine who torpedoed the ship later admitted nothing that the ship could have done would have avoided their torpedo attack. So here's what happens. In the summer of 1996, 11-year-old Hunter Scott, a rising sixth grader at Ransom Middle School in Cantonment, Florida, near the Navy town of Pensacola, was watching Jaws with his father, Alan Scott, a school principal. Hunter was on the lookout for a topic for the history fair. It wasn't the first time Hunter had seen Jaws, but Quint's speech made him stop to think, was it true? And so then he went to investigate and found out about this. And he found out that at the time in 1996, of the over 300 survivors, 154 were still alive. And he wrote to them and asked for interviews. Many of them sent personal memorabilia and original primary Navy dockets. A number agreed to talk with Hunter. It turned out most of the surviving crew members thought the U.S. Navy had scapegoated McVeigh for its own incompetence and had been pushing for the captain's exoneration. Oh, here's where it gets real sad, too, by the way. So McVeigh was charged with this, and then after the war, you know, he was retired. But it bothered, I mean, it just got under his skin so much. Like, family members of the dead sailors would write him letters saying that you're the one who killed my son, things like that. And then it says in 1968, at the age of 70, McVeigh III took his own life with a pistol. He was found dead, I think, in his front lawn, holding a pistol and a little toy sailor in his other hand. So it's just sad stuff. So Hunter wanted to vindicate him. And so he got all of this evidence together. And then he created this project to show that the captain was not really at fault based on all the testimony he had acquired. Then it says word of the project spread. U.S. Representative Joe Scarborough, a Republican from Florida, whose district included Hunter's town, invited Hunter to show the exhibit in his district congressional office. And I think later he went and testified before Congress. And so by then they were working in 1998 to pass a bill exonerating Captain McVeigh for responsibility of the sinking of the Indianapolis. In October 2000, 32 years after McVeigh's death, a joint congressional resolution passed clearing his name, and President Clinton signed it into law. The next month, Governor Jeb Bush of Florida, I think about what Donald Trump called Jeb in the primaries. Remember that in 2016? No, he didn't call him. I'm sorry. I'm confabulating history here. He said, Jeb Bush, great guy, kind of low energy. And on Saturday Night Live, they have him making fun of Jeb Bush. Anyways, Jeb Bush of Florida declared August 24th, 2001, Hunter Scott Day. And I believe Hunter Scott went on he went on to study, I think, like the U.S. Air Force Academy, become an engineer there. I don't know. I think it was the Air Force Academy. I believe he got involved in the armed services himself. And there's a book about it published in 2002 called Left for Dead, A Young Man's Search for Justice for the USS Indianapolis. So that joint resolution may not have happened if Hunter, at the age of 12, had not decided to make a history project about that. So good job, Hunter. Good job. All right, here's the next one. How a college term paper led to a constitutional amendment, article by Scott Bomboy at the Constitution Center. This is about the 27th Amendment. So the 27th Amendment is the most recent amendment to the Constitution. Its existence today can be traced to a college student who proposed the idea in a term paper during his time in college. So today, this is written May 7th, 2021, marks the anniversary of the amendment's ratification in 1992. So the amendment says no law varying the compensation for the services of the senators and representatives shall take effect until an election of representatives shall have intervened. So what it means is that a sitting Congress cannot give itself a raise or cut its pay during its own session. Pay raises or pay cuts only take effect for Congress for the next Congress. Maybe we, you know, should we even really be paying these people at all based on what they get from lobbyists and other people? But in any case, it makes sense. Have an amendment. You can't give yourself a raise in your current session. You got to wait for the, it takes effect in the next session. It says here, it's not a new idea. Sensible. James Madison first proposed this amendment back in 1789, but it took 203 years to become the law of the land. In 1982, a college undergraduate student, Gregory Watson, discovered the proposed amendment could be ratified. And he started a campaign for it, that it had been introduced. And so it didn't have to be reintroduced. If it was voted on in I forget, it's 2/3 or 3/4 of the of Congress and the president are required to ratify amendment. I think it's 75% of the states. You know what? I shouldn't look up stuff. Required to pass amendment. And Congress calls for a convention. 2/3 of the states, 34 out of 50. Amendments proposed by Congress or convention become valid. They got to be ratified. You need 2/3 to propose them, and either by Congress or a convention of the states. And you need 3/4 of the states to ratify it. Or I think 3/4 of Congress. I don't know. I'm not a constitutional law expert. But the idea is, Watson said, no, you can still ratify it. Even though it was introduced back in 1789, it's still valid and it could be ratified. So Watson believed that Congress, because Congress never stipulated a time limit for it, it could still be ratified. He submitted the idea in a paper to his professor. The professor gave him a C. When I protested, she said I had not convinced her the amendment was still pending. In 2017, the university retroactively awarded Watson an A for his paper. Later, Watson started a self-finance campaign to get the amendment ratified. Man, this person really cares about the get that 27th Amendment in there, and he went and did that. Then the states began to ratify it, Maine in 83, Colorado in 84, five more in 85. And then it continued on into 1982. Two states became the 38th state to ratify the 27th Amendment, making it part of the Constitution. You know, it's funny. I've been showing my kids Schoolhouse Rocks. I'm just a bill and I'm on Capitol Hill. They have a great parody of that in The Simpsons. I'm an amendment. Why can't you just, I want to throw those flag burning hippies in jail. Why don't you make a law against that? Because that would be unconstitutional. But if we change the Constitution, we can make all sorts of crazy laws. That's a great clip from the Simpsons, by the way. So, you might think, what does it matter? But, you know, if you were the one that got the ball rolling to get an amendment to the United States Constitution, I think that's pretty cool. So good job, Michael Watson, for persevering on the 27th Amendment of the Constitution. Finally, this one's not about history, but it kind of makes medical history. I think it's really neat. This was published in 2015 in USA Today. Teens toy bug experiment leads to medical discovery. So it says, in Rochester, Minnesota, toy bugs, an eighth grade Minnesota boy, and a school science project. Put the three together, you have a combination that will be used to save hearing aid wearers big bucks. So it was a 14-year-old boy, Ethan Manuel, a middle schooler at Rochester Central Lutheran, was studying. And he was doing an experiment with batteries that were in his little toy bugs. And he discovered in the process with the batteries about their longevity, he uncovered that hearing aid batteries can last up to 85% longer when left exposed to oxygen before being inserted into the hearing aids itself. So he was trying to create a science project for school. So he used some of his toy box that had these little toy bugs in it, and converted that to work with hearing aid batteries. So he was just using a hearing aid battery to convert in these toy little bugs that they vibrate. And he was trying to increase the longevity of the battery. And he says, by waiting 5 minutes, you can increase the lifespan by 85%. You take out the battery, the tab, it gets exposed to air. If you put it immediately in, it works. But Manuel found out that if you let the hearing aid battery sit in air for 5 minutes, you get the longest battery lifespan. He just did that by doing his little project, and apparently no one else had really figured this out to try it with the hearing aid batteries, but he got the idea here. Ethan, who has worn a hearing aid in his left ear since the age of 4, got the idea for his experiment when visiting his audiologist. I keep telling my patients about it, said Dr. Meyer. I'm just so proud of this kid. So, hey, pretty good for you. Did you ever do a science project, by the way? I did one science project. I tried to grow plants in alteration of their circadian rhythms to see if it would affect their growth. I took pea plants. So I grew some plants in sunlight and other plants indoors with artificial grow lights to see. And I think I showed there was actually no difference between growing them with artificial grow lights, turning the lights on, by the way, at night versus when the sun would normally be out. So that was my one little science project, the best that I could come up with. That and a baking soda volcano, always fun. So hey, I hope that you all found that enjoyable, neat little stories to share. Thank you guys so much for stopping by Free for All Friday and the Council of Trent podcast, and I just hope that you have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trenthornpodcast.com.